Welcome to Hindu Voices Podcast, the place where the Hindu perspective, Hindu values, and the Hindu voice are broadcast around the world. I'm your host, Subodh. Namaskar. Welcome back. Today we'll be talking with Richo Chek, owner and operator of Strictly Medicinal Seeds in Williams, Oregon. Richo has been working with plants his whole life. This is a lifelong passion for him. He integrates a Vedic perspective and practices into what he does, into his ethics, into his mission for his business. He's a very passionate man. He's very deep and complex in his views and his perspective and ways of going about what he does. You can tell that he has a lot of love for what he does. You can tell that this is his calling in life. So let's hear from Richo on his life and his work at Strictly Medicinal Seeds. Welcome to Hindu Voices Podcast, Richo. Richo, can you tell us about the mission of your business, Strictly Medicinal Seeds?
The stated mission is sowing seeds worldwide for the benefit of people, plants, and the planet. But if you came over to my house and you looked up above the door, you would see scrawled in Sharpie pen above the door, "For the plants," with an exclamation point. And really, that is our main focus, is to promote medicinal herbs and permaculture plants, as well as common heirloom vegetables to the general public via seeds and nursery stock as well.
So what was your first inspiration that set you on this path of saving medicinal plants?
Points where I was really inspired to look more deeply into the relationship between people and plants. It started very early. I can remember at the age of four, it was the year before I went to kindergarten. I was playing on our front steps, and I had some marigold flowers in my hand. And as I worked with them, those kind of elongated black seeds came out of the marigold flowers, and so I went to my mom and I said, "Well, look what I found here. What is this?" And she said, it's the seeds from the plant." And I said, "Well, then if I put them in the dirt, will they make another plant?" And she said, "Yes." And so I was inspired at that moment to plant my first seeds, and it was really the plant speaking to me at that time. It wasn't an adult showing me a seed packet with a multicolored picture on the front. It was just a connection between myself and the plant. Then in our family Bible, it was rarely opened by anyone in the house, so it was a perfect place to put all the little miniature leaves and seed pods and so forth that I collected on through the years of my grade school. And then when I was 16, as a budding archaeologist in Colombia, South America, I had an experience where, and this is in one of my books actually, Making Plant Medicine, but I had an experience where Jack Wynn, who was the graduate student who was hosting me there, stepped on a piece of glass and then got a little shell inside the cut, and it started to fester and get sore. As you can imagine, things, wounds really start to go bad in the tropics very quickly. And so Don Luis Abelardo, who was our one-armed guide in the Sierra Nevada, in the mountains where we were horseback riding and looking for potsherds and whatnot, camp and then applied it to Jack's foot. And then in the morning, it had drawn out all the pus, and the pus was on the outside of the leaf. And when I took the leaf off, then I found the shell also had been drawn out from inside the cut. And so it gave me a introduction into herbal, into the efficacy of simple herbal remedies that come right out of the forest and into the home, or right out of the garden and onto the medicine shelf. So that started a long learning in ethnobotany, which I continued to foster as I lived 3 years in East Africa, and then when I came back to the United States, and eventually worked 11 years as the production manager at Herb Farm, manufacturers of liquid extracts here in Southern Oregon, up to this day, where now I've written 3 books on the subject, and I'm constantly using medicinal herbs as a means to keep my 11 grandchildren healthy, and also promoting medicinal plants so that other folks can be empowered to use free, effective medicines from their environment instead of getting caught up with money and plastic wrapping.
Right. So this has been a lifelong passion for you.
Yeah, and I've always spoken to the plants, and they were for me an inroad into spirituality as well as a material means to nourish myself and heal.
Right. So you're interested in the spiritual aspect of plant medicine as well as the physiological effects.
Yes, and it's not really so much about the chemistry of the plants as it is kind of more about a person's where a person's mind is when they're working with plants and or gardening, and how a positive attitude and openness toward and openness towards what the plants have to offer, as well as an intent as to where the plant will go, what the medicine will do, all that I think wraps up into a secondary level of efficacy for the food or for the medicine, where you know people say, well, put your love into the food when you're making it, or people making like a Thanksgiving meal or food for their children, lunches for their children, or dinner for a group will hum to themselves or feel good intentions when they make the food, and then that makes the food taste better, you know. It's similar to that, but on a medicinal herb level, it has to do with mainly collecting seeds, where I collect seeds, and as I'm collecting the seeds, I chant mantra to myself and keep negative thoughts at bay, and keep an intention for the seeds to do well for people and contribute to their health and happiness, because we're all after happiness in the long run. So those are the kinds of thoughts I have while I'm collecting the seeds.
Uh-huh. So you're putting a lot of presence and awareness in what you do. So you mentioned chanting mantras and other forms of meditation and awareness and practices that you're into. So how would you describe the Vedic path that you're on as influencing your work and also your life in general?
It has to do with how I breathe from the first moment I wake up in the morning. The Bhagavad Gita says practitioners pour their incoming breath into their outgoing breath. And so it it is a way of holding your mind in some kind of a conscious manner that you've decided is appropriate for you to put out into the world and to your children and to act as an example for them. So then it moves on into the morning when I do my morning meditation and I chant the sloka every day as a means to sort of permeate what I do with the spiritual blessings of the guru, and of course do my asanas, which is very good for body and also mind. I'm getting on in years, so various parts of me are beginning to fail, and so some time spent in yoga every day assures that I can still keep serving. And then as I as I move into my day, and there are phone calls and there's computer work to do, and maybe I'm writing or taking photographs, then things will come up. People will be disturbed for one reason or another, and those are the moments that really test me. Anger really is the worst poison. So instead, to recognize that anger is an inappropriate response, even when someone is angry at you for one reason or another, whether it be justified or not, and then to respond with kindness and with empathy and compassion instead, and sort of diffuse that anger and not embody it, because really we don't want to take those poisons. So if we can avoid getting angry, then we've done a lot towards improving our own health and creating peace among all the people.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you have a very holistic spirituality and worldview. You're integrating your spirituality into everything from your health to your business to how you're relating with other people to how you start your day to how you live every moment.
Well, you know, I certainly try, and yet sometimes things will crop up and anger will rise, even in just a split second. It is such a potent force. And this happened the other day, and I was so shocked at myself. But there was a shipment of roots coming from an organic farm in Kentucky, and I'd asked someone to because I wasn't going to be there when they arrived. I asked someone to handle them, because they need to be spread out and cooled and carefully healed in right away, because they can't be kept in a bag for very long. And it just didn't happen. And when I discovered that it hadn't happened, anger just boiled up in me for a split second, and I was really, really shocked. But then the way that I worked with it was to go out and to start to open the boxes and spread out the roots myself. And as soon as I started working with the plants, it was like a balm on my spirit, and I was able to completely be at peace. But it's difficult to control the emotions, and obviously just being able to recognize the emotions in the first place is a starting point. I'm always shocked when people say, and then I started to get really mad, and to me it's like saying, and then I took manure and spread it all over my hair. Mm-hmm. it's exactly the same. I can't understand why anyone would boast that they were mad or put the cause of anger on some other thing or person besides themselves, because the anger comes from within. So to me, it's a signal that that person requires even more compassion and more of an example of how we might be able to act in a peaceful way that spreads love like a balm over all of nature.
That's beautiful. So you mentioned a few minutes ago about your work being Seva, and you mentioned your guru. Do you feel that your work that you do in your business and with your farm is a Seva to your guru?
I do consider it to be an offering, and yet there's this business aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here's this offering, but I expect money in return. And that really changes the vibe in many ways. So yes, on a overall spiritual level, I do consider it to be a kind of Seva. But I always and I would like to reply to each person who comes to me and says, "Oh, we have a seed library in Bellingham. Can you send your old seeds to us so that we can give the seeds away to people?" I'd like to say yes to all those people, but instead I sort of say no to all those people, and then I just spontaneously give things from time to time to different people who are really, really in need. Somebody who's in jail, or someone who is having a health crisis, or someone who thinks that they really, really need Haemia salicifolia leaves because they're taking a plane trip to Bosnia and they feel like they're going to be really unable to accomplish their trip unless they have this particular leaf from this particular plant. In situations like that, often I'll say yes and I'll just use my own personal resources and take care of those people, because I don't really want to give old seeds to a seed library in Bellingham. I don't think that that's not my best offering. I'd rather that they made an order online and that I sent them my finest seeds possible, and that there was this interchange of energy and that they then moved the seeds out to the people. That would be fine. But meanwhile, in terms of absolute Seva, you know, I love to go to one of Amma's retreats and wash all the spoons. It's worth more to me than gold to do that. And I feel that is, you know, a pure Seva, because I'm not expecting anything in return. I'm only giving.
Right. So it's a pure selfless service. So, Richo, what do you hope that your business and your work accomplishes?
Well, you know, Subodh, we've really preserved a great many species of plants over the years, introduced and conserved and disseminated scores of plants that would not otherwise be available to people. And I do a lot of work with universities, also government, in supplying voucher samples and material samples for analysis with different medicinal herbs. And some of these rare ones that we've introduced are just the ones that they're after, because they can't find them anywhere else. And the chemistry of those plants is unique, and there are molecules there that cannot be found elsewhere. Plants are extremely complex bundles of active constituents, and so we're plowing new ground, looking for cures for cancer, looking for cures for MRSA, the methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus, you know, superbugs. We're looking at endophytic bacteria and trying to start to understand bacteria more closely, and a lot of the bacterial loads and also fungal loads, mycorrhiza, things of this nature that are in medicinal herbs or in some of these rare plants that would not otherwise be available are unique and significant in terms of improving health and fighting, you know, disease throughout the world. So those are the kinds of things that I look at and feel really good about. And you know, you can't cover it all. There are literally tens of thousands of medicinal herbs worldwide, and we've propagated and collected seed from about 2,000 different species over the last 40 years. So you find areas that seem to be particularly important. The Ashitaba plant from Japan has been really, really important in terms of fighting MRSA. The aloes from South Africa are something that I'm particularly interested in. There are hundreds of species aloes in South Africa that are ripe for analysis and carry all kinds of secondary compounds that are potentially very useful in medicine. If you look at my website at www.strictlymedicinalseeds.com, you'll find a large listing of aloes available. And this is something that almost anyone can bring into their home, even if they don't have a garden or a window box. They can at least put an aloe plant on their windowsill, and the aloe helps cleanse their air, and it gives them a connection to great nature. And then some of the aloes are also edible or can be applied to the skin when there's a lesion of some kind, and they're healing to people. So this is a connection between people, plants, and healing that is relatively easy to establish and maintain. The aloes don't need a lot of light. They don't need a lot of care or water. They can live in the same pot for a year before they need to be replanted. And they make flowers at very unexpected intervals, usually in the middle of the winter, which brings great joy to people.
Mm-hmm. So other than the plants that you just mentioned, what are some other very promising medicinal plants that are on the forefront of research?
The standard herbs of Western medicine, black cohosh, blue cohosh, wild yam, golden seal, bloodroot, all of those have been in roots, a barefoot medicine, for centuries, because they work. And so it's not necessarily about, you know, searching through the forests of Ghana to find an herb that, you know, kills Lyme's disease. It's often more about just familiarizing yourself with plants that are already available, that have already been used in our case in Western medicine, and discovering the kinds of chemicals that are in there and the ways that affects the human physiology. The for instance, Echinacea. We have 9 species that are native to North America, and the plant was used by Native American people for treating infections, and the Western herbalists sort of grasped onto that and started to produce a lot of echinacea products, saying that they stimulated the immune system. But when we started to really examine the plant, we couldn't find the active constituent. And then what we eventually found out was that there is a endophytic bacteria inside the root of the plant that creates these sort of this sort of black markation that's in the root of the plant, and that when it's taken into the body actually creates a immune response. And so in this case, we're not even talking about plant chemicals. We're talking about another being that lives inside the plant that makes the plant be a medicinal plant. So the echinacea is important. Golden seal is important. There's a long history of using whole plants in medicine. It's called whole plant medicine. And it turns out that if you take the golden seal root and you combine it with the leaves of the plant and make the extract or tincture out of that whole plant, then the efficacy is much greater against bacteria. And so if you have a bacterially modulated infection, then if you take this whole plant extract of golden seal, you get a lot better effect, and that's because there is a efflux pump inhibitor in the aerial parts of the plant that keep the bacteria from pumping the berberine that's in the roots of the plant out of the cell wall. There's a lot of magic in this whole plant medicine, and there are many examples of people using very simple plants like plantain to cure complex illnesses that were difficult to approach with any other kind of therapy. So what did we come down to? We come down to, I guess, again, keeping that third eye open and waiting for the right medicine to come and using that instead of maybe reading a lot of literature and studies and trying to hit the problem over the head with the contemporary academic sledgehammer. Instead, possibly better to go out to the garden and ingest the plants that you know are safe, that you're attracted to, and that may well prove to be more effective therapy than anything else you can do.
Fascinating. It sounds like one thing you're talking about is trusting the divine intelligence that's been put into the plant and that the plant contains, instead of trying to pick it apart and find an active constituent with which to make an extract of, but just trusting that this whole plant is medicine in itself.
Yes, and truly all of the above. I find that I learn a lot by going out to the field and picking a seed head and rubbing it and blowing off the chaff. And as I blow off the chaff, I imagine that I'm dispelling my own vasanas, my own negative tendencies, and then in the end, what I have in my hand is the seed itself, the pure seed that is the life force. That's pure nature, pure God, Krishna, Allah, whatever you know, Buddha, whatever you want to call it. This is right there in my hand, and then. On the other hand, I'll take the same seeds and I'll come inside and I'll put them under the microscope. Mm-hmm. And I look at them under the microscope and a little bit of sand looks like a large chunk of cosmic debris, and the seed itself is shining and whole, and then there's another one that has a split in it, and I can see a little mold, and then I see the nature of the chaff and what size it is, and it tells me more about how I can continue to clean the seed down to 100% purity, and so I think all of that Subodh is of value. The Western scientific eye, the Eastern third eye, the review of existing literature, and the openness towards the magic within.
So let's talk a little bit about the Eastern perspective. Have you looked much into Ayurveda, and what is your take on Ayurveda's resurgence in the modern world these days?
Well, I'm not an Ayurvedic practitioner, but I did introduce ashwagandha to gardeners in the United States many years ago, and produced the first extract in the West when I was working at Herb Farm, made a dried ashwagandha root tincture, which is really awesome medicine for people who are you know, fagged out or hypothyroid, lacking energy, whether it be spiritual energy or sexual energy. The plant bolsters you up, and that's a standard herb of Ayurveda, and in fact a common weed in India. So I come into it from the plant aspect, basically. Love the herbs, and they are certainly of use in Ayurveda, and the Ayurvedic way of looking at constitution, you know, the person's constitution, and treating the appropriate, you know, choosing the right herbs for a person's constitution is a very important aspect, because, you know, you can take a golden seal and give it to one person and it'll cure a disease, and then another person it'll just create great coldness in their body because it's a very cold herb. So it sort of depends on whether a person is like has a hot constitution or a cold constitution as to whether the herb is appropriate to use for them.
Mm-hmm.
And Ayurveda really, really handles that very nicely, looking at the person instead of looking at the disease. So I think that Ayurveda is extremely important, and I think that modality, and that it's been utilized effectively. You know, Dr. Ladd has trained hundreds of practitioners who have gone out and set up shop in different places in the U.S. And this is all good stuff. My job is not to so much to promote Ayurveda as it is to promote Ayurvedic plants. And right now I have kind of excited. I have a shatavari plant growing in my greenhouse that's producing hundreds of green seeds, and that will hopefully soon ripen into black seeds, and we'll be able to get that very important Ayurvedic women's herb, basically a medicinal asparagus, out to a lot of people in the U.S. And there's a lot of demand for that. So you know, there's only so much I can do. Promote a plant and produce organically grown, you know, seed of a rare Ayurvedic herb, I'll leave it up to the practitioners to promote how to use it and to find the people who really need it, and also to other gardeners to continue to grow it and move it out into the needy world.
I really like the sound of all that. So what are some other Ayurvedic herbs that you're working with that you're excited about?
There is bala, which is sort of a mallow. Mallows contain this mucilage that is rich in polysaccharides that are very healing to the immune system. And so I grew a bunch of bala plants this year, and it's a perennial kind of bushy mallow. It's basically Indian marshmallow, mm-hmm. you could say. And so that's one. Bringaraj, the Eclipta alba, is one that that I'm working with this year, and that one is used treating old age. It says, I think one of the texts says something like, you know, makes the white hair black and cements the loose teeth back into the jaw, some such thing. So that's one of the ones that I work with quite consistently. Tulsi, of course, primary. We carry five different types of tulsi, and I personally grow all my own tulsi seed in seclusion, and personally harvest it all and create the seeds for the different types. There's Krishna tulsi, there's Shyama tulsi, dark like Krishna. There's the Rama tulsi, which is green. Rama is green in Sanskrit. Then there's the Amrita tulsi, that is a special one that we obtained seed from Amma's ashram in southern India, and that it seems to be intermediate between the two. There's Vana tulsi, which is the wild bush basil that you can find all throughout India and also in East Africa, which is where I first encountered it. And then there's the what we call the temperate tulsi, which is Osmium africanum. That's really not a tulsi. It was a misidentified herb for many, many years in the USA, and people called it holy basil and so forth. And there was a lot of beating of the pan around it. And actually, it's a standard medicinal herb from East Africa that is really easy to grow in the temperate U.S. And so we maintain that as a type of tulsi also. And that one is a great introductory herb for anyone wishing to grow tulsi tea. And what I say about tulsi tea is that, you know, if you're a beginning herbalist or someone interested in herbs, and you become locally famous for knowing something about herbs, and yet you're hesitant to really prescribe an herb to anyone for fear that you might make a mistake, then go ahead and tell them to take tulsi, because it's good for everything and it will never harm anyone, and always always brings light into the heart of those that drink it. So tulsi is primary.
And what I understand is this Amrita tulsi seems to be especially high in constituents and medicinal properties.
It's a good one. I'm impressed by the Amrita in that it's bigger and stronger, and it is a little bit more reddish than Rama tulsi. So yeah, the Amrita is good. Some of the active constituents that are in tulsi are rosmarinic acid is one of them. And that equates to the anti-anxiety or anxiolytic aspects of the herb. So anyone who's experiencing a trauma or anxiousness, right, and fear can take the tulsi, and that will lessen the fear and give more strength and courage. The other aspect is the essential oil, oil of clove called eugenol. And this is a very strong antiseptic, and so it will have an effect against any kind of environmental pathogens. and that's why Tulsi is so good in treating any number of disease states, is that it's just antiseptic, and it'll kill off the bad bugs and won't kill the good bugs. So it's a dynamic cooperation between an aspect of the plant that gives people more psychological stamina and courage, and then also an aspect of the herb which kills pathogenic portions of your environment, whether it be internal or what's coming in from external sources. So it's a daily ritual. I drank Tulsi tea this morning. I drink Tulsi tea in much the same way as a lot of Americans drink coffee, and I find that the positive aspects of having taken the Tulsi tea and chanted a little bit of the sacred syllable, seed syllable Om, while the water is coming to boil. Well, you know, that carries me through the whole day.
Nice. I think it's for those reasons that Tulsi's generally considered an adaptogen herb.
It is considered an adaptogenic herb, which helps you adapt to stress. So there's that anti-stress, anxiolytic element that helps you stand up against the stresses of daily life, and then that's a good definition of an adaptogen.
So I'd like to hear a little bit about some of your personal history with healing plants. I'm sure you have a lot of these stories. What's one that comes to mind about some deep personal healing you had working with plants?
Well, I guess I could just be really honest and current about it. I actually had an event about 10 days ago, I think it was, where longstanding varicosity in the back of my leg decided to turn into a large, swollen, basically venous blockage known as thrombophlebitis. And this occurred as I was driving cross country. I was walking through tall buffalo grass, tall wet buffalo grass, botanizing for a whole day in Wyoming, and then got in the truck and needed to do about 5 hours more of driving to get to get on down the road, basically. And so I did that, and then when I got out at the hotel, I thought, my leg hurts. And so on stripping off my pants, I realized that I really had a problem. And this is the kind of thing that listeners should know, that you should go to the hospital when this happens. But I don't like hospitals, and I didn't go to the hospital. But, boy, I tell you, I was really in a bad state for the rest of my trip, and I had to cut it short. And I came back here to Southern Oregon. I took a plane back instead of driving back. What I did was I created a poultice out of the Aeschylus hippocastanum, because this a horse chestnut tree, and it's dropping its nuts right at this time of year. And as soon as I got home, I saw those horse chestnuts on the driveway, and I was like, ah, it's exactly what I need, because it's a great vasoconstrictor, and it will work on this kind of blocked veins and inflammation. Meanwhile, I went to the hospital and had a analysis done to rule out a deep vein thrombosis, which is life threatening. You'll throw a blood clot to your lungs, and that's all she wrote. So they ruled that out, and so I started to treat myself with these hot poultices, where I would take a cup of hot water, put it in the blender, and then 2 cups of chopped horse chestnuts, and then blend it up, and then apply that to the lesion, and leave it for an hour or so while I was reading or reclining. And I've managed to resolve this issue without using any blood thinners or any Western medicine. So, you know, when you're an herbalist, the safest place to practice is on yourself. You have nothing to lose but your own life. You're not going to be responsible for anybody else's life. Although I think my grandkids would miss out on some fun if I left this plane at this moment. But yeah, that's the kind of thing that you can do with herbs. I mean, you know, if you went to the hospital, you know, when you go to the hospital, they're like, okay, you know, you're going to have to take this and that, and we're going to send you for ultrasound, and then we're going to send you for another ultrasound, and would you please go down and give a blood sample? And it's hell. And so if you can avoid that with your own deep roots, then more power to you. But the nuts reminded me about planting trees, Subodh.
Okay.
And you know, Amma says to plant trees, and I just couldn't agree with her more. Anybody listening to this can look back into the last 12 months and assess their impact on the health of nature by counting up how many trees they've planted. Plant trees from seed, plant trees from seedlings. When you're walking down the street and you see a dead tree in one of those little cages next to the parking, then feel free to throw caution to the winds, rip it out, and put a live tree in there. All of us need to plant more trees for the health of the earth at this point. It's really the best thing that we can do. In a way, it's the only thing left that we can do that's going to have the degree of impact that's required to turn around nature's issues that are occurring right now. And so I encourage everyone to plant trees at every opportunity. I personally have not stopped planting trees, and will plant more. Plant trees, people, for the love of nature. Plant lots and lots of trees.
Could not agree with you more on that point. So, Richo, just tell us before you go, what are the names of your books you've written?
There's Making Plant Medicine, which sort of gives my history in learning about medicinal herbs, and it serves as an introduction to people about making products out of plants, including herbal tinctures that are equal to what you can buy in the health food store and like one-tenth the price, teas, decoctions, poultices, like I was talking about, the direct application of plants to the skin, which is poorly understood in Western medicine, Western herbal medicine, and really should be utilized much more. So that book is a great introductory text on herbs, herbalism, and making plant medicine. Then there's Growing at-Risk Medicinal Herbs. That's a in-depth look at 20 rare Native American medicinal herbs that are of value in terms of being strong medicines. They're at risk because they've been over harvested from the wild, and they've been over harvested from the wild because there's demand for them, and there's demand for them because they work. So how to grow those and encourage those great herbs to grow in your own garden. Then there's the Medicinal Herb Grower, which is all about organic cultivation of medicinal herbs, and not specifically about this herb and that herb, but more about how to prepare good gardens, and how to make cuttings, and how to successfully plant seeds, and you know, three different important recipes for potting soil, and an addendum on collecting medicinal herb seeds, and another one on harvest and preparation of herbs. So these three books are available through my website at herbalreads.com. It's just the way it sounds, herbalreads.com. And and you can get one of my books there for free shipping. So it's cheaper than buying it from Amazon. And then, of course, Strictly Medicinal Seeds catalog goes out every fall. We just issued a wonderful catalog, all illustrated, hand illustrated by my daughter Senna, who's a very good botanical artist. And then in the spring, the spring summer catalog, this can be found by requesting the catalog on our website at www.strictlymedicinalseeds.com. And if you want to go paperless, then just use the website. Everything that we have is available there. There are multiple photographs. All of the photographs are from our own camera. Nothing is purchased or brought in from other places. And we've tried to do a lot of, like, taking a picture of the plant in flower, and then also taking a picture of the seed, and then also the seed when it just germinates into a little seedling, and then in an intermediate stage. So that'll help you understand what it is that you're planting and what it looks like when it comes up and what it should look like when it's finished. And it just dispels a lot of questions and ignorance. And so yeah, check out the website. It's the making of many years of effort, and contains monographs on all the medicinal herbs that we have available for sale. That's really what I've got going on.
Very good. I've personally read Making Plant Medicine, and it's an excellent book, an introduction to the art and science of herbal medicine. I derived a lot of benefit from that book. So, Richo, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to speak with us on Hindu Voices podcast. We want to thank you. We want to support your work. Please check out Richo's website and his business, Strictly Medicinal Seeds. Check out his books at herbalreads.com. Richo, thank you very much. Namah Shivaya.
My pleasure. Namah Shivaya.
So there you have it. Richo Chek, a Vedic practitioner, very dedicated to his sadhana, to his spiritual practices, to the Vedic philosophy, yet also a very deeply practical man, working hard to earn a right livelihood through his lifelong passion with plants, running a farm, running a mail order seed and plant business, being a scientist, studying plants and medicine, writing books, all while being a father and a teacher. So I hope this podcast today inspired some of you out there to live your passion. Maybe you learned something about medicinal plants. Maybe you learned something more about Tulsi. Maybe you just heard about an interesting man doing his thing and doing it in a Vedic way with a Vedic inspiration while serving his guru. Thanks for listening. Namaskar.